Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Locke.
Welcome to Serotalk. Podcast 43 for June 7, 2010. This is Michael Loff.
I'm Ricky Anger.
And it's Mike Calvo.
It's a long one. Hey, Mike, what's up, buddy?
We're in trouble.
Oh, man. No, he didn't. Yes, he did.
He did. Waited a little bit to see what exciting announcements, if any, would come out of WWDC and the keynote from Steve Jobs that just took place a few minutes ago. So we want to comment on what was announced.
If I was writing an article about the whole thing, I would call it iPhone 4. Evolution or revolution?
But no. It's all wonderful, amazing,
magical,
fabulous, tremendous leaps forward.
Extraordinary.
Stainless steel.
Yeah, right. How
Yay!
Many times did you say stainless steel?
I heard it about five.
I love how the people clap after he kind of says, hello. Yay!
You know, I mean, he is a bit of an icon to those who
absolutely.
You know, love Apple. There's many things that I'm happy about. I don't believe that the Apple iPhone 4 is a revolutionary product. I think it's an evolutionary product. They're keeping up with the Joneses and other smartphones. The one thing I will say, though, about accessibility before we even get started on the mainstream stuff is that they have just gone leaps and bounds in Braille access. They've added full support for Braille in iOS 4. Boy, that's going to be an interesting one to start on, but iOS 4. That is very exciting, and I've been able to play with a number of Braille displays, and every single one that I've run with has just worked. You just go in there, you go into the accessibility settings, it says Braille, you go into Braille, and it just tells you if you want grade 2 on or off. You tell it you do, where you want your status cell, .7 and 8, if you want it on the left, there's a couple different settings, or to the extreme right or something else, and it tells you activate. What it's doing is, during that time, it's looking around for a Braille display. And most Bluetooth Braille displays now are discoverable as they're running. And it just finds your Braille display. You type in the code, and you're off and running. And it just works.
So you don't go through Bluetooth and, you know, enter a PIN and all that stuff.
As Matt Campbell would lovingly say, one would think.
No, actually,
it doesn't work that way. I thought it would too. And any good geek worth their salt would say, well, I'm going to pair up my Bluetooth display first. But nope, it doesn't do that. In Apple's infinite wisdom of thinking for us, it says, well, sighted people are never going to have to look for Braille displays. A blind person may not look for Braille display to connect in the Bluetooth place. They will look for it in the Braille settings, and that's exactly where the pairing is. So it is kind of a unique place to put it, although it makes sense.
So there's no formal list of supported displays, but you're saying pretty much everything in the Bluetooth arena, at least everything you've tested, has come to pass and connect and do its thing.
I would assume that it parallels whatever's accessible on the Mac, right.
So on the desktop, yeah, exactly.
Which is a great deal of displays. I mean, these guys rock. They really, really have done accessibility. And what is exciting to me, while I find the accessibility to be evolutionary, I find the fact that accessibility is in there at all to be revolutionary. I applaud them for that. We as a company and a community applaud them for that. And it's great to see that they're raising the bar. They're continuing to raise the features in their accessibility as others, like Microsoft, openly abandon accessibility in their phone OSs and just leave us by the wayside when it comes to Windows Mobile OS 7. And Android, limping right along, does what they can and what they will do when they do it to give us some semblance, meager semblance, of accessibility according to what their patron saint of accessibility believes that we're entitled to. So, Apple, you know, kudos to you.
I'll go through these kind of in order they were mentioned. The first thing being iBook update, first of all, for the iPad, that's going to add PDF support, the ability to set bookmarks, and the ability to take notes. And, of course, that will be coming out for the iPhone at some point later this summer. So also coming out is the Netflix app for the iPhone. Netflix, for those of you who don't know, $8.95 a month. You get some movies. You get some TV shows, at least previous seasons. You don't get the most current season. But my son uses it to watch, actually, a lot of documentaries. So a lot of good stuff up at Netflix for $8.95 a month. And they claim you can stop and resume where you left off, even between devices. Watch part of it on your iPhone and then go over to the iPad. So that'll be kind of cool if that works, or switch between networks on the fly.
That does work, by the way. That works.
Okay.
Right now we can do it on the PC, and my family does it all the time. One of the concerns I have with that is that we have, as a family, been using Netflix, somebody on the computer, me and my wife watching a movie on Netflix on one iPad, the girls watching another movie on Netflix on the other iPad, all using the same family account, all downloading at the same time, wondering when is Netflix going to say, you're not allowed to have that many connections to the server. So it'll be interesting to see if they indeed let that live.
And are you responsible and do it on Wi-Fi instead of clogging up the 3G network?
Don't get me started, Mr.
All right, all right. Well, just wait. Hold on, buddy. Okay, iPhone 4, they demoed 8 of the new features for the hardware. The hardware shown was basically what was displayed on Gizmodo, so folks had been following that already had a clue as to the device.
Stainless steel.
Yes, stainless steel, yes. Bands. 24% thinner. Now, this is one thing I like the concept that they, instead of before the way, you know, it was kind of rounded, they've made the back of it flat and the corners kind of squared, which I suspect would make it more comfortable in the hand. And that's what reports have been in people that have actually held the phone. So I think of times I've almost dropped the unit, or actually did, but fortunately on carpet and not on concrete. So that might be a nice benefit. But also, yeah, these stainless steel bands that go around it. So what Steve is saying, I guess, is they found a way to make antennas to improve the reception of the iPhone, something badly needed. Also look cosmetically doable there and actually look nice. So I'd be curious to see if it actually works. I think all of you would agree one of the biggest weaknesses of the iPhone is its reception as a phone.
Mike is on T-Mobile, and you and I, Michael, are on AT&T. What do you think about that, Mike?
Do you have less calls? Do you have the problems with dropped calls that all AT&T users experience?
Not at all.
So you say most of it's a network. Well, Apple must have felt the phone was partly responsible. I mean, I can turn my head sometimes 2 inches, and there's just all these bad spots where the call will drop if I stay there for like a second or maybe about 2 seconds.
One of the things, though, that I found that was interesting is the fact that he kept referring to antennas. It sounds to me like this product is going to ultimately be multi-carrier, and it'll be very interesting if it actually ends up being that way.
Yes, and he also did use the word carriers plural as when talking about bandwidth.
Right.
Well,
so,
remember, there's more than AT&T worldwide.
Well, sure.
I still believe it just may very well be that's there. If they've been working on this for 18 months, that means that even when the 3GS was just a way to, you know, to get some more milk money, you know, out of the user. This product was in development before the 3GS was released, 6 months before. This product has already been planned. So they definitely probably feel that they're going to get at least 2 years, maybe three, out of this current cycle. So it's got to be forward-looking. I vote for multi-carrier. I may be wrong.
The new unit will have a front-facing camera. So this is cool. You have camera in the front and the back, so you could have some two-way conversations, or they showed an iMovie that you could get for this device. So there might be the scenario of actually doing interviews.
Yeah, but again, dude, I mean, evolution, revolution. How many years haven't the Nokia phones had front-facing cameras? Wow, big deal. You can't even use it over 3G. It sucks. It's Skype.
The forward-facing camera could be used by something over 3G, but the video calls, which they talked about.
Very last thing with the
new tool.
We wondered if they were going to promote Skype or iChat, but actually they have their tool they're calling FaceTime, and they claim it'll do H.264, and it will be an open protocol, although as of now you can only call from one iPhone 4 phone to another. It's a nice way to get people motivated
to upgrade, and it is only on Wi-Fi as well for the moment. Steve Jobs did say that this is only on the iPhone for the moment. We have some work to do with the carriers.
Oh, whatever. That's more carrot on a stick. That's the same junk they pulled with tethering.
My geek is coming out, because I'm looking at this. Imagine now I can go to an event, a convention, and actually do a video interview and actually show the people and show the products. Now, how cool is that?
Now, well, see, I think it's good. I'm not going to start saying fantastic, spectacular, wonderful.
Magical is the key word.
I do think this is magical. I don't know how excited people are about this. It's great, but it's not a huge, shocking revelation.
But what's great about it? I'm lost. We've had video cameras in phones forever. The fact that this is an HD camera, so my Motorola Click, which is inaccessible, has an HD camera in it that does 720p. Fact that it's got a nice editing app, okay, that's cool, but it's an
editing app. If it's accessible. Photographers, if this is accessible, this is going to open up a tool. Maybe the three of us aren't into video editing,
I think Mike's point is that this is good to have, but it's not something that is revolutionary.
Yeah, I mean, the iPad, that's a home run out of the park. It really is. In the short time that it's been out in the market, it's a home run out of the park. This product? Nah, I don't believe that it's that big a deal.
It's like anything. When you put in 100 features, some folks, this is going to be their bag. Others is going to be the Braille display support. Maybe for some others, just something I really didn't think much about is the micro SIM tray. Although, does this mean you're going to be able to switch a card between your iPad and your iPhone?
I kind of glossed over that. I guess I was too busy paying attention to the gyroscope, which is actually the thing that I don't care much about. But that is going to be good for gaming.
Well, not only gaming, what about GPS?
What is a gyroscope?
It's where an accelerometer can tell that you've done some motion and can maybe measure speed and that kind of thing. The gyroscope, if you are moving in a circular motion, it's able to detect that.
The blind gamers might be the biggest one. I don't know if this will translate into uses for GPS. They mentioned Yelp, but I would think this would maybe give us some abilities or capabilities in terms of travel access.
Well, it's all in what the developers decide to do with the capability that's now in the hardware.
Yeah, I got some ideas around that. That's kind of neat, actually. If you think about the proximity of the phone to an object when taking a picture.
Exactly. That's what I talked about. The ability to do photos, maybe OCR technologies down the road that any companies might bring to the party. So that is why I'm excited about the camera, is more of the OCR.
Did they say
It was five.
Yeah, but evolutionary, not revolutionary. I mean, my wife's had an 8-megapixel camera in her phone for the last 2 years almost, or a year and a half.
They had to do some of this evolution at some point. You know, if you're always revolutionary, then you're probably going to be behind on some things because you're too busy innovating with others. And for Apple, it looks like in some ways, this is their evolutionary release where they're catching up. And they're also doing things like multitasking that people have had forever, but they're doing it in their own Apple way. So look, we are evolving, and we're doing it in a revolutionary way.
Competition is a good thing. You could say it's magical.
Well, it's magical.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, you have to like this, Mikey. A second mic for noise cancellation. I don't know how much you've played around with VoIP on the iPhone, but certainly if you go to the speakerphone or you hear your voice echo back about a second later, and it's a little distracting. So that is a cool feature that is going to enhance our ability to do Skype and other voice-based applications.
Yeah, that is cool, and I don't believe that many phones have that.
Now, another thing that we totally blind folks may not appreciate, but I'm sure our sightlings and partially sighted persons who acquire this device, is the increased, not only the resolution, the 960 by 640, but also 320 ppi, pixels per inch. You know, it's going to make your graphics smoother and all that cool stuff that we never use. But
actually, Tom Merritt from the TNT, the Technology Today podcast over on the Twit Network, was mentioning that an average art magazine in print is about 250 pixels per inch. So you're talking about 326, so it's higher resolution than a printed magazine, which is pretty darn good.
Although they said that there probably would be eye fatigue after a while because of its backlit display. But, right, the resolution is pretty awesome. I mean, you can't down that. Then there's the battery, which they didn't mention specifically. I've seen in other reviews that it is actually 19% larger. This did say that you get 40% more talk time. What'd they say, about 6 hours of video, was it? I know it was 10 hours of music.
It was 10 hours of Wi-Fi.
Okay, 10 hours of Wi-Fi. 300 hours of standby time. I think last year they alleged 200, and I'm not buying it because we haven't seen anything near that.
No way.
Although, I've found out that the biggest leakage of battery power actually seems to be voiceover, and that supposedly is fixed in 4.0. So if indeed that is true, we will benefit from that as well.
I felt voiceover was quieter in 4.0. In the last beta that we got, it's actually quieter. So it may be that they just did some compression and turned it down or something, so it's not putting as large a strain on the amplifier or something. It is a little weaker in the sound.
But it does allow ducking, right? That's a topic that came up in the chat, is that now you can have your third-party apps like Utunes and Wonder Radio and actually have ducking when you do something with voiceover, so the music audio is dropped so you can hear what you're doing.
Yes.
So a lot of people will like that.
Not only that, but you'll be able to use those types of apps and do multitasking. So you'll be able to read your email while you still stream your radio.
You know, none of the apps are ready for that yet. I mean, I've been running 4 for a while now, and you're still not able to do that unless the app supports it. So it's not something that just happens. The app actually has to support it, because the moment you hit the home button and the app is running, it goes away.
So let's go to the software, which has been renamed to iOS 4, meaning it can carry over, I guess, to the iPhone, the iPod Touch, and iPad, whatever. So it's now called iOS 4. They showed how you can move between audio apps just by swiping left and right.
Right now, you just double tap the key, and then right along the bottom, like right above the home button, are your apps. And you just kind of swipe through them, and you tap on the one you want, and it opens it up, you know, and that's it. When you're on the first page of it, it gives you the ability to do the orientation lock so you can turn off the automatic orientation stuff. And that's neat, because I turn it off on my phone all the time. I just wish you could keep it that way. The phone doesn't go into landscape.
Nice.
Yeah, and that'll be fantastic.
So they mentioned that you can rename folders and place them in the dock, and to back up a little bit. So now you have the ability to sort your apps into folders. You can put all your radio and your social networking tools each in its own folder. But this is saying you can actually rename them, which I guess is cool, but also put some in the dock, right? So you can have your most commonly used folders. Have you done much with folders, or you still have all your apps strewn out?
I still have them on all these different places. And quite honestly, for me, the dock, to me at least, I mean, I don't care. You know, the dock for a sighted person may make a difference. I can't think of anything that I want. As a matter of fact, I wish I could remove a couple of things from my dock. The photos application, for example, I think it's in there or something.
They're adding Bing search. Any of you use Bing?
Bada Bing, bada Yahoo. Oh, sorry.
Bada Google.
No, they added Yahoo and Bing. Ricky pointed out that they added Yahoo also. And, you know, and I said, well, yeah, but Yahoo, Bing, Yahoo, same stuff.
But choice is good, I suppose. But they're certainly not going to remove Google, although I'm sure some would want to. But that's, I think they would upset too many happy campers
with that kind of decision.
Yeah, that's there to stay. Well, I guess it is good as far as the iBooks that you can purchase and downloads to all of your devices at no extra charge.
Ricky loves the iBooks. You should talk about that, Ricky.
I say I love iBooks, although I haven't seen it yet because it's just for the iPad at this point. But
yeah, but you don't like Samantha, so are you really going to enjoy the TTS of the iBook?
Probably not. However, there are things where it will be okay and I can deal with the TTS. I'm not going to be doing a lot of pleasure reading, but I do love the idea of being able to read with my son the same book, and he can see whatever pictures are there. We can both read the text. And if I had a Bluetooth braille display, then certainly I could read iBooks, not have to worry about Samantha, and just use my braille display to get access to all of these commercially available titles.
I really believe that if these large AT manufacturers have not gotten the memo, people, the blind ghetto note takers are dead. This is it. It's over. The party's done. Do not give us another generation of these devices. It's done.
Oh, but can't we milk the existing products for a couple of years?
Just stop selling the $7,000 products. Right now, for at least a third of that, you could get yourself a 40-cell Bluetooth Braille display, an iPhone, an iPod Touch, an iPad, once the update comes out, any of these products, and just use them as your blind ghetto note taker and leave the parts that are expensive at home when you don't want them. This is a great thing for us in technology, that now we can just kind of build our own accessibility product built on what we need and what we can afford, of course.
Well, item number 8, as far as the iPhone 4, was iAds. So I'm curious how you feel about that, Mike, as a business owner. If someone says, hey, we can put some ads if you sign up for it, and you know, you get the money, you get some money, we'll do a 60-40 split with you, we'll find the advertisers, sure. Throw it in there. Are you good with it? A little extra revenue?
Yeah, we've got ads in iBlink Radio right now, and I'm certainly not opposed to putting ads into things. I think that it's the market. There's no such thing as a free lunch. I mean, we do things like SA to Go and that are free, and hopefully at some point, if blind folks don't get really frustrated, if we don't overdo it and we do it in a positive way, meaning in a you know, not in a nasty, intrusive way, we're able to provide ads. Perhaps we can get some more free services out there that are kind of ad-driven. So yeah, I don't have a problem with ads. I think it's cool.
So here you've got two color choices, white or black. Price, just as with the 3GS last year, $199 for a 16 gig or $299 for a 32 gig. Or if you want to...
No 64.
Or for some reason you want to be cheap, you can get last year's model, the 3GS, for $99. Although when you're paying $2,000 to AT&T over the next 2 years, I don't know why you wouldn't spring for the extra $100 for the new hardware.
3GS, did they mention... Which?
No, they didn't delineate, right? If it was 1632 or if it's just $100 off both, they just said 99 for the 3GS.
Maybe it's a 16 gig. And so you could get your accessible phone for 99 bucks if you just were really strapped and couldn't pay the extra 100. Yeah.
Right. If you don't feel that the enhancements in the hardware are of any use to you. And I'm sure the 3GS will do just fine. Of course, we don't know which features of iOS 4 will not work on the 3GS. Or at least I haven't seen any list of that just yet.
The 3GS is 32 gigs, and it takes regular 640 by 480 video. Now we've introduced high-definition video, but we haven't upped the capacity of the memory. What kind of a genius came up with that? And we have no ability to put in any kind of external storage. What kind of a genius came up with that?
I think that has to do with Mr. Jobs and Apple's research that $299 is a price point. Although the iPads, with the great sales they've had, I agree with you. I can't see why they wouldn't deploy 64 gig. Certainly can't use up that much more space in the device. Certainly not. So I don't know.
Oh, no, the chips are the same size. The chips are exactly the same size. There's no difference in the chips. It's just how much they store and the price you pay. It's just a matter, I guess it was a manufacturing decision.
Or is it one of those, if you want 64, go to the iPad.
Yeah.
Marketing. Or the iPad Touch.
Which one of those? The phone launch date is June 24, with pre-orders beginning on June 15. AT&T, supposedly you can, within 6 months of the end of your contract, at about month 18, actually between months 12 and 18, they said people paying over $99.95 a month can do it at the one-year mark. I'm not quite paying that much, but I'm told that I can, but who knows, maybe the front page of AT&T is deceiving. I haven't gone to the next level yet. So that's their option for you.
Go right to the CEO to ask.
You know, Ralph?
Don't you dare.
But
write
only
to
do
him.
It once.
Yeah, only do it once.
Otherwise, you'll get a cease and desist order.
Exactly.
Get the iPhone on the 24th, but you can get the OS on the 21st. So,
and that's a great idea, because think about all the problems they had last year releasing the operating system and the hardware on the same day, and all of us who couldn't get it done and had to end up going to the store.
So those of us who are sticking with our 3GSs can get our OSs downloaded and out of the way before the stampede on the servers begins.
You can also see what you're missing out, because you can go and look at it and then kind of decide if you're going to trade out or whatever. And when your friend gets his, you know, whatever. I mean, you can live with it for a couple days before everybody else gets it.
Also, Apple's they're introducing two new pieces. I guess they decided too many other people were making great money off it, but a new dock for $29 called the Bumper. Mm-hmm. So you also got the dock, but you also have the Bumper case for $29. So the top and the side and everything, you can open up. And yeah, it is this year free for users of the iPod Touch. What, they charged them last year like $5 or something, but I got so many complaints.
Yeah, some free, minor fee to upgrade the OS. So free at no charge. Yeah, it was free at no charge. As opposed to free for a nominal fee. Yeah,
which means no charge today. We'll find some other way to get it. See an app store near you, right? Get people upgraded and back to the app store. Where'd the money be? Now we are actually to the other stories outside specifically of what Apple announced today. So we have Skype 2.0 that supports calling on the 3G network. So again, something else along with Netflix to gobble up a lot of data. Later on the podcast here, speak with Scott Rakowski in Sydney, Australia, and you get to hear the audio fidelity is phenomenal. I don't know if either of you have Skype 2.0, but unfortunately they broke the Flick gestures, but everything is on the screen, so just feel around and you can find. The only thing that's kind of a pain is the contacts, because I can't figure out how to scroll them. Even when I choose a letter, they seem to stay the same. So what you do is, I guess, just go in and choose only show your online contacts or your phone numbers. But Skype has promised to fix that issue, so that would be very nice once that's done. Apple rejects apps, or at least in this case, one particular app that looked like and used the term desktop. Now, of course, you know, we have the SA Mobile desktop. So what is your feeling about that?
I really don't have one. I mean, I think it's ridiculous. I think, again, it's a sign of Apple arrogance, but it's their sandbox. And if they want you to play in it a certain way and you're making enough money on it, you too will bow and do what they ask you to do. I think it's ridiculous. I don't understand the point of it. It doesn't make any logical sense to me. It hasn't happened to us about the SA Mobile desktop on our forthcoming application. Now, we haven't submitted it to the App Store for approval yet, you know, for our upcoming SAMNet application. So I don't know.
But aren't you bothered by the fact that they're making these rules up as they go? This is not anywhere in the terms of service. They just looked at this app and decided, no, that's a desktop. We're not going to allow that. Doesn't that bother you? If you spent 3 months or more developing an app and then all of a sudden, by the way, we don't like the term desktop.
It bothers me, but understanding that Apple is a company that has double standards for everything. They remove what they call porn applications, yet they leave the sports, you know, the swimsuit editions and the Sports Illustrated stuff and all that with scantily clad women sitting there on the App Store.
Oh, but that's not real porn.
Well, you know, I mean, it just, again, it goes to show that they have double standards for things. So, quite honestly, it hasn't happened to me. It hasn't happened to Serotech. When it happens to Serotech, then we shall rant.
Well, now, there certainly may be other announcements that come out this week. There's been a lot of things reported, like the Mac Mini supply is dwindling, and some say by June 14th, or maybe in this case the 15th, they'll be announcing new Minis. So, you might just hold off a few days on that if that's the way you're deciding to go into the Mac. There are 6 iPad app demos with VoiceOver available. So
Vision Australia.
Vision Australia. Yes. Yep.
And we better be nice to Vision Australia. They're a reseller.
Yes, yes. Yeah. AT&T's new $325 early termination fee. Not to be, maybe slightly outdone by Verizon with their $350. I think AT&T sat back for a few months waiting to see what the FCC would do, and when there was really no hand slapping. So, hey, we'll do that too. But we got to recoup our costs, you know.
I mean, we got choices, and we have the right to exercise our choice. I think that AT&T is going to push the audacity envelope like they did by sending the cease and desist. I don't care what kind of a moron was handling the desk that day. At some point or another, consumers are going to push back. They're going to push back at Apple for their arrogance. They're going to push back at AT&T for their arrogance. Sooner or later, all of these companies, corporate arrogance, and that goes for Google too in some respects, in many respects. I mean, I don't know what shape it's going to take, if it's going to take the Department of Justice or whatever. I certainly hope not, because I hate the government getting involved in this kind of stuff. We'll just sit back and giggle hysterically at the large fines that are imposed upon them, or the class action lawsuit or whatever. You know, what I wonder is, are they doing it like to you guys now who already have existing contracts, or is
no,
it
the new one, the new iPhones, when you upgrade, you'll get that $325. Yes, you will.
That's why it's not retroactive.
Okay.
And I think so that's why I'm buying an unlocked iPhone and putting it on the darn network. I feel like it. And yeah, it's more expensive, but you know what? Freedom is worth the choice. It's either pay me now or pay me later. If you could spend $900 on an unlocked iPhone today and pay for it, even if you put it on a credit card and pay it over the next 13, 14 months, even with interest, you're still going to pay less than you're going to pay over the next 24 months to AT&T for the luxury of having your $299 iPhone on a crappy network.
AT&T has a great plan to minimize congestion. Free Wi-Fi, opening up their free Wi-Fi spot. So have any of you found an accessible app for finding the nearest AT&T Wi-Fi spot?
I think they should build that right into the iOS 4. I think they should build it in there, how it stores in some place where you can never find them, but it does, Wi-Fi networks that you've been to.
It should automatically say if there's an AT&T network, this is an accepted Wi-Fi spot to connect.
Don't even mention it. Just go on it. I was in Minneapolis last week for a meeting, and I hadn't been to the hotel for several months because I haven't been in Minneapolis for a few months. And I don't have a list of all the Wi-Fi networks that I attached my iPhone to, but it just jumped right on theirs when I got there because it recognized that I'd been there before, and it was an accepted Wi-Fi hotspot. So they should just program them all into the OS.
I don't think I wanted joining a network without me at least knowing that it's doing so.
Well, you could have a preference, join known networks automatically.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Yeah, what they do have that.
There is an AT&T app that I do know now does at least tell you your bandwidth, which is good, because if you're going to be raped, you might as well know it in advance.
I like that. I like that. It's true. This is what they call the kiss first.
Wow.
A number of great articles last week, but one that you'll find along with all articles to all things that we're talking about. But this says the good and the bad and the ugly about AT&T's new pricing plan and what it means. So let's talk about this new pricing plan. Basically, they're claiming if you have an existing unlimited all-you-can-eat $30 a month, you can continue to use this. However, if you come in getting a new phone, or as of today, June 7, you come in, you have two choices. You either have 2 gig per month for $25 plus $10 per month for each additional gig, or the Econo plan that I hope they don't sucker people into. That's $15 a month for 200 meg and an additional $10 a month for each 200 meg beyond that. So they're saying the average use for a lot of people is 400 meg. So if they go and say, you don't need 2 gig here, just sign up for 200 meg, and they use a little bit over 400 meg and they get them for $35 anyway. But I was thinking about this. It said you could use up 200 meg with a 20-minute video. So imagine you go watch a one-hour TV show. All of a sudden, you've got a bill for $45 just for watching one television show. Folks, I think I'd stay away from the $15 a month plan unless you're a hermit and never go out and are always using Wi-Fi, I suppose. But
now, it's worth pointing out that this is not just for the iPhone. This is for all smartphones with data plans.
You know, you've got things like the BlackBerry that take data through a straw because they're text for the most part. You know, the iPhone has been pitched, sold, packaged as a multimedia device to everybody, your mobile entertainment on the go. I think here you've got two companies that differ in their goal for the consumer. Apple wants to make it all whiz bang cool and wants to be your solution for entertainment on the go, and AT&T people just don't want you using their data service, and they're going to do everything in the world that they can to charge you for a service they don't want you to use.
What really makes me angry about this is that AT&T is trying to spin this as, oh no, it's okay. A lot of people only use 60, 70 megs. Yeah, there are some people who use 400 megs, but you know, we've looked at our data usage, and really, the Econo plan is going to be just fine for most people.
The other
2 gigs is going to be just fine for those that use more. And what they're basing this on is data that they've collected for who knows how long, but it doesn't take into account the fact that things are moving forward. We now have Netflix on the iPhone. We can do Skype over 3G. Things are moving forward, and people are going to use more and more data, and it's not okay. AT&T knows that, and I don't want them patting me on the head telling me it is.
And the one that really drives me insane is what you were telling me this morning, Ricky, when you told me that they charge you the tether tax. To tether your laptop to your iPhone, they're going to charge you $20 for the privilege. Is that once or is that a month?
That's per month.
They're going to take it from your data bucket?
From your phone data plan. Yeah,
I got three letters for you, AT&T. WTF. I mean, that's just insane. I really, really feel for people who use this service. And you know what's sad is that other carriers are going to see this and they're going to follow suit. People have become so dependent on these devices that we're going to roll over like idiots and take it.
I think maybe the opposite. If Verizon's offering 5 gig and T-Mobile has unlimited but really starts rolling off your speed once you reach 5 gig, I think AT&T wants other networks come into play as far as offering the iPhone. I think at some point they'll have to rescind or they'll have some special deal for 5 gig. The problem is, like Ricky said, these are based on today's usage patterns. You know, 65% of people are taken care of within 200 meg, 33% use less than 2 gig, so 98% of people are under 2 gig, but by 2014, the average projected use will be 7 gig. So if they sucker you into $15 a month plan, you're going to pay over $350, or even if you do the $25 a month plan, they're going to get at least $75 a month out of you.
And the thing that drives me insane is if we want to get, say, another iPad, okay, I can't add it to my existing plan that I have here for the current iPad for another $30, add another unlimited leg.
Oh, you can't. No.
Let's just say AT&T's right. For the first 6 months of my subscription, I use a gig every month or 500 megs. But now I go on vacation with the kids and everybody decides it's R&R time. We got both iPads going. My teenagers sit down and watch Netflix every day for 5 hours a day or 7 hours a day over 3G. And I end up using, 30 gigs, 20 gigs. Look at what is my bill going to be?
They will send you text messages to warn you, apparently, that, oh, by the way, you're approaching your limit, so you're about to have to fork out another $10. You have to be more conscious of your usage, and not that that's necessarily a bad thing always, but if, as you say, you're on vacation, you're driving down the road, you don't want to be paranoid the whole time about, now, how many gigs was this? How many megs was that?
And now we're getting back to the 1970s and long distance minutes, and I'm calling you long distance. Hold on. Can everybody be quiet? I'm on long distance. You know, I mean, please.
And especially with video chat, it's going to be exactly like that. All right, we're going to get two shots and I'm hanging up.
Might be a good thing because it's going to make people responsible about thinking about where they're getting their data from instead of just taking the phone out of the store and just leaving it in 3G mode instead of being responsible and connecting to their Wi-Fi network at home or various places instead of just mindlessly gobbling up bandwidth that's not there. They would argue, well, our towers are infrastructure. Structure cannot handle this as of yet.
Well, that's not my problem. Life's a bitch. They should make their infrastructure, build it according to their data usage and to what people purchase. I mean,
goodness knows they take enough money to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a company, Michael, that's been around since the 1800s. These people aren't stupid. They know they've reinvented themselves 50 times to sunset. It doesn't matter. I don't think that the consumer should have to think. Not to mention, most consumers are not technically savvy enough to do that stuff. You know, so AT&T is going to be having people's paychecks because people just don't know how to do that. It's just wrong. It's wrong. It's extortion. It's my opinion, and I'm sitting by it.
We want to hear what you, the users, have to feel. Resources at serotalk.com. Maybe we finally found a hot button to just flood the email gates here. We'd like to hear what you think. Do you want the benefit of maybe only spending $15 a month instead of being mandated to spend $30 when you don't need it? Or are you upset that it's no longer an option and it should stay at $30 unlimited? We want to hear from you. Where are you with this? And now for the rest of the news, because yes, there is more in the world than Apple.
Wait, really?
Yes, believe it or not.
Who knew?
Well, at least from a 24/7 perspective, there is. This one is sure to cause some controversy and excitement, depending upon who you ask. But researchers at University of California, UC, created a retina from human embryonic stem cells.
I think this is pretty interesting because there are a lot of people who are really waiting and praying for a cure or something to assist in at least making things better in terms of sight. People who have retinitis pigmentosa or macular degeneration would benefit from this. And of course, you have the other side where people are saying, if you're blind, you might as well get used to it and stop clinging to the possibility that something's going to happen to change things for you. But I, for one, think that choice is a great thing no matter what we're talking about. So for those who really do want to get their sight restored, this is pretty promising stuff.
Stem cells is very controversial, people with their various religious views, but you know, just the ability to take cells from one's own body and use them to transplant to fix another part, another defect, if you will, or to cure a disease that you may have in another extremity of your body. See, when I was 11 years old, I had to have this surgery. My ankles turned out, and so they took part of the tibia bone that runs down in front of your leg. They cut it out and put it in my ankles to hold them straight to keep me from being crippled. Otherwise, by the time I was an adult, I would have been crippled in a wheelchair. So,
no kidding.
This concept to me of taking one part of your body to fix another is just totally fascinating, totally awesome. But I know there's some people who will disagree with that. Cell research has the capability to fix almost everything that ails us. I think it's cool stuff myself.
I would agree.
For those still using their Nokia phones and so forth, KNFB readers come out with version 6.4. It is a free upgrade, and it speaks colors, which is cool. So now you got the color identifier in there. It has glare detection, so no longer a need for the polarizers, which I would always end up having come off my phone. It has tilt feedback, so if you're holding things at a weird angle, that obviously knows it can't get an accurate scan. It gives you some verbal indication of that. And the ability to export the texts from the documents you've scanned into notes and some other cool features. Persons owning that can get the free upgrade by signing in there at knfbreader.com. Speaking of readers, Victor Reader 3.2 and also the companion version 3.2 has come out. Try to explain all this. It itself is a free upgrade. However, there is an optional thing you can buy for $49 that's called the Soft Pack. So first, what do you get for free? I think a couple of the biggest things in the new companion 3.2 for those who use it, a lot of people don't. They just copy documents straight to the Victor. But one of the things it does is it converts doc to HTML, and doc would be like your Word 2003 and earlier documents. And then also it converts PDF to text. So then you could copy those files. So you can't copy directly a PDF or a Word document to the device. Actually, I thought you could copy a doc, but it could have a lot of garbage characters is what I was told. So you would convert it to one of these other formats and that would get that squared away for you. But then what do you get when you pay the $49 for this soft pack? Basically, what it does is it adds one of those .kxo files, just as you would do to authorize your NLS books or RFBD or any of the content like that. So it adds support for the Word 27 and 2010.docx format, which you can then copy directly to the device. You don't have to use the companion if you don't have a need to use that to transfer the documents, and that works well. I tested it with 2010, and they copied directly very nice. Another feature is the enhanced Audible audiobook format with the .aax extension, and those books sound much better than the originals. Also support for files you may purchase in iTunes with the .m4a extension, and the ability to some folks excited is the ability now to record in MP3 and WAV formats. I don't really think sounds that much better. It's 96K mono, but it gives you the capability to copy it. Right, for your notes, so you could use it in a classroom and then transfer your notes much more easily. The reason I bought it, because they've added support, at least for the non-protected EPUB book format. And some people believe this could actually replace DAISY at some point down the road. This is going to be used by Google, which is going to have 1 million titles. We keep hearing 1 million books, but where are these 1 million books? But anyway, we do know Google obviously is working very hard on that project and a lot of legal battles where they're concerned. So that is the format they're going to use. There are some up at Project Gutenberg, and there are some over at Open Library as well. So that was kind of my motivation. I believe it is going to be one of the big future formats, and right now the Victor is the only device, but I suspect by this summer some other devices will be adding support for the growing in popularity EPUB format.
EPUB is going to continue to gain in popularity, and I'm still up in the air as to whether I want to purchase this upgrade or not. A lot of people are actually pretty angry about having a paid software update for the Victor, and the bottom line really is that you don't have to pay for it if you don't care about this particular functionality. The other great thing is that there is plenty of choice out there in the market as far as DAISY readers, and for those who maybe don't want to use their Victor anymore or are a little upset about paying for a software upgrade that provides some features that are standard in other players, they can make the decision to make a change. But I'm kind of curious about the enhanced Audible support, so I may eventually purchase this.
The take from Humanware is we'd rather make it an optional choice that people would purchase rather than raising the price for everyone, and maybe everyone doesn't need these features. And even if you opt not to, it doesn't preclude you from getting the benefits of other upgrades beyond version 3.2. It is an optional add-on. And they had some problems at first getting the keys set up, so it took a few days for folks, so that was a sore point for some folks because they didn't know what was going on. Well, Ricky, have you ever thought about being an internet broadcaster or maybe just wanting to learn a little bit more about how it works?
I haven't seriously considered becoming an internet broadcaster, but I have certainly been curious about what it takes to do that. Luckily, I can find out now because there is a free tutorial put together by the guys over at Mushroom FM detailing how to broadcast over the internet.
Yes, Brian Hartchin and Jonathan Mosen put together a tutorial, and of course their hope is that you'll pick up these skills and come over and join the team at Mushroom FM, but they've made it free and open to the blind community, just hoping that more people will get the broadcast bug. But its focus primarily is Station Playlist Studio and Station Playlist Creator, which are the tools most commonly used by blind broadcasters. It is truly the most accessible software and is the back-end tool for Somnet Radio. It's pretty good. I've listened to part of it. Very insightful. I learned a couple of little tricks. So check it out. It is for free at mushroomfm.com/join. Now, Ricky, I know back in the day you used to play around with Linux quite a bit, as I recall. I remember you explaining to me how to make like the Ubuntu disks talk and so forth. So maybe you're excited about the Vinix 3.0 that has come out, and now it is based on Ubuntu 10.04, which means it should
that
overcome
was very
some,
smart.
Right, it should overcome some problems that they had last time by going with a different flavor of Linux. This, of course, has both Orca and SpeakUp screen readers, so you have two different screen reading options, right? And you have the Braille display support.
I actually am excited about this. There are three screen readers. There's one called Yasser, which apparently can be used both in a GNOME terminal window or GNOME terminal window. I'll get shot if I don't pronounce that G in there. And you can also use it just on the console. I always kind of cringe when I see things like especially for the visually impaired. But in this case, I think it's more a convenience factor than anything. You can get Orca to talk on the Ubuntu Live CD, and you can certainly get Braille TTY going and things like that, but it takes a little bit more tinkering, and this is just all nice in one place. You can boot off the CD, do the installation if you like, or you can even just play around with it on the Live CD and see what you think.
I'm always excited about any other accessibility options, and I know a lot of people feel that way about a customized, but that's the whole point of Linux. That's why it's open source, so that it can be modified, and if the developers would be doing more with it, making Orca more stable, then maybe we wouldn't need a special version of Linux, and maybe somebody could even do a demo and let us know on the podcast. Actually, I do have an old 2.4 Celeron that was my son's computer back from 2004, and Windows is a little sluggish these days.
Might make a nice little Linux box, though.
Exactly. So we're thinking about that. And if we do, we'll cover that in a podcast. Well, those of you hanging on to your Triple Talks and Deck Talk USB devices, but you want to go to Windows 7 and play around with 64-bit versions, there are now 64-bit drivers. How cool is that?
Yes, the days of the hardware synth are not entirely gone. I did eventually have to give up my Deck Talk Express just because it was a serial device, and while I did have a serial to USB converter, it eventually just became not worth it to continue with that. And of course, System Access doesn't support hardware synthesizers, but for those who do want those things and are using screen readers that support hardware synths, then yay, you got it on Windows 7 64.
And speaking of tools for Windows 7, also available for Vista and I guess Server 2008, cool little program called RAM Map. And this lets you really see how your memory is managed. So if you like to geek out and find out what programs are using up your memory and maybe have memory leaks, get RAM Map from SysInternals. And of course, all links that we discuss available over on the front page at ZeroTalk.com. Well, we've seen a few reviews of Office 2010, the most recent one from David Pogue. Microsoft's feeling a lot of heat and competition from open projects, be it Google Docs or OpenOffice. The release date, June 15 for the masses. I know a lot of folks playing around with the beta. And on June 24, we will do our tech chat for this month. We've cut them back to one per month for the months of June, July, and August, and we will be talking about Office 2010. The big one that people seem to really be excited about is Outlook and this ability to sort your messages by conversation so that you can really streamline, and that's great, especially if you do email lists where there's all kinds of tangents that maybe you don't care about or that you want to keep those messages grouped together. So
yeah, it's good stuff, and there is even an online version of Office, which is free, and I think they're doing that to sort of have themselves in the game along with things like Google Docs and Office solutions in the cloud.
Ricky, do you know anyone who is either blind parents homeschooling their children or parents deciding to homeschool their blind children because they just don't feel that the public education system gives them what they need?
I do. People who choose to homeschool their children, be they blind or sighted, the reaction is always, oh, how could you do that? That's so horrible. They're going to be sheltered and they're not going to possibly learn enough from you to have a quality education. And depending on who the parents are, that may very well be true. But with that said, homeschooling does not automatically equal horrible education. And in fact, posted recently on Fred's Head was things that you could do to be more successful as a homeschooling parent. And a lot of this stuff makes sense, not only if you're homeschooling, but if you're a parent whose child is in public school, but you like the idea of continuing learning at home and you like interacting with your child and teaching them things. These tips for keeping things organized, keeping things on track, making learning for various subjects actually fun rather than something that just has to be done. Great tips here, whether you homeschool or not.
101 Tips for Homeschoolers is a great resource. Statistics show that these students are doing better and they seem to be migrating and going into college and doing just fine. It all comes down to the quality of education and parents, even if you have little interest in homeschooling your child, because it is a big commitment. I hope you are certainly supplementing what they're learning in the public schools. So you never rely on our public schools to teach your children all they need to know. We all love Viper security software for Windows. Now there's a version coming out for the Mac. And of course, some of the diehard Macs think they don't need virus protection, which I would disagree with. You browse in what's called a sandbox, meaning it's a temporary session. And when you close it, all that data pretty much is removed. Viper for the Mac, the Enterprise Edition has come out to kind of help it make its way into the workplace. But there will be an individual version for consumers, and I'm kind of excited about that, because while the primary thing, of course, is just safe computing practices and staying away from the gambling and porn sites, anyone can be tricked, or any website can be loaded with malware. And I would have to believe, with Apple's growing popularity, and actually that eventually hackers are going to target the Mac, and once that happens, you're going to have some security system in place.
Feel confident that you are protected from nasty stuff.
Well, you can read, if interested, about the new Facebook privacy settings. It's interesting, we talked about it quite a bit because I really sensed a lot of buzz. Like you said, you knew so many people that were defecting and closing their accounts that it made a difference. I'm telling you, folks, there's always strength in numbers. And so they are modifying the controls and putting everything in one place. So that will be very handy, so you can get in and set your privacy up the way you like it. Also, some changes in the defaults.
Smart that they're making the decision that they are, although if they wanted to continue to be successful, they sort of had no choice but to really take this seriously. And it was kind of interesting as Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, was being interviewed about privacy. He was a little bit nervous and was really trying to sidestep a lot of questions about why they made the initial decisions that they did. I think he wanted the interviewers to really focus on the positive, and that is that they are making changes to ensure that things are a little bit more streamlined and straightforward for consumers. So good for you, Facebook, for finally waking up and realizing that privacy is important for people.
You know, a lot of companies just hope that they can make some money by sharing their data with third-party entities. I think it's a little cheesy. It certainly diminishes your reputation. But when you're as large an entity as Facebook, have so much personal information on individuals, it just changes the paradigm. And while Facebook has folks of all ages, demographics lean toward a younger crowd. And new research shows that younger folks are more concerned about privacy data than older persons. And I believe probably that's because younger persons are aware of it, or maybe they've already had some incident where it has come back to bite them. Ricky, how do you feel about this one? A new test pilot program, I believe in the Chicago area, is giving people the option to use their cell phone as a way to enter their hotel rooms. Certain phones you can actually use, perhaps the iPhone, so that you can have an app, or maybe the Android phones, you can pre-register so you don't even need to go to the hotel desk. I guess my concern would be what happens if the data were compromised. But if the program works, it could certainly expedite the check-in and check-out procedures in many hotels. It's being tried right now.
I can see how that would be convenient, certainly, but what happens if you lock your hotel room, then you're out and about, and somebody snags your phone and steals it? Then, of course, I guess they'd have to know which room you were in, but if you had all your valuables in there, well, they've certainly got the method to unlock that. I'm also kind of curious what happens when you have more than one person who's staying in the same room. Can you get one key card and one app that you can use to unlock the door? Could be a good thing and has the potential to not be such a good thing. You know, what happens when the
battery
app
dies,
doesn't work?
Or there's some kind of service issue where it can't communicate with the server. That's why it's being tested, and it'll be curious to see what the results are on that, if people are open to the idea. Well, a few things here on the Google front. We have the Google Chrome operating system that will be launching this fall, or autumn, as I guess they say in the rest of the world. Again, no word there in terms of accessibility. And also the Google Chrome browser 5.0, not only for the PC, but also Linux and Macintosh. And
still no accessibility. And I kind of want to start screaming when I hear people say, wow, the Chrome browser is so fast and it looks great and it has all these different features, and I would never go back to IE or even Firefox. Chrome is the bomb. And I'm thinking, not so much for us blind folks, because I haven't seen anything with relation to accessibility. Now, with that said, Google may very well be working on this stuff, and it's just a matter of time before we see it. And I truly hope that that is in fact the case.
Not yet, folks. Maybe someday, maybe to catch over, Google will get it. But again, it's important for us to speak up and say, hey, we're out here, we're numbers, we matter, we buy things, we use the products. Dell announces the Streak, and I'm hearing that, Ray Stevens.
The Streak.
5-inch competitor to the iPad, and of course it will be running on the Google Android system with some but not yet the necessary accessibility that we need. But is 5 inches enough? It's a little more real estate than the iPhone, but some feel the iPad is too big. They want something that can fit in their pockets, so they feel 5-inch
somewhere
screen.
In between.
Should Google ever get the touch screen thing down in Android, maybe that will be a good size for those that complain this iPad is too large,
this iPhone is too small. The Streak is just right. I personally think 5 inches is a strange size for a device, but we shall see.
They said the people at Dell have never been more excited. The staff's very excited about it, so they feel that they're bringing something powerful to the table.
When the iPad came out, all these other people were announcing, well, we were working on a tablet. Guess what? Not anymore. And so hats off to Dell for at least doing something to give us some choice in this market.
With that, we're going to put the wraps on tech news, because we certainly had a long one today with all the announcements from Apple and everything else. You stay tuned. We're going to demo Skype on the iPhone. Of course, the gestures are not there, but Skype has promised to correct that issue, and it is doable. And you feel around the screen a little bit and kind of figure out where things are. And we're going to show you how that works on 3G, and of course, our concerns that that could cost an arm and a leg with new pricing. Stay tuned for the rest of the podcast. Our next podcast will be June 21st, and our next Tech Chat, June 24th, where we will cover Office 2010, the good, the bad, and the same-o.
What do users of Samnet enjoy most?
The movies.
The movies.
And the radio.
That too, and I like the fact that we can use POP and IMAP for our email. And my new discovery is the fact that you can make CDs, and it's very accessible and easy to do.
Old radio shows.
Media Lab is very accessible, simple.
Yeah. I like my document scan.
I love everything about System Access. Very affordable.
Shows us inaccessible internet.
Yes, I love that.
And the socializer is a neat thing.
Also, the flexibility of the price, so reasonable.
And you know what I love more than anything about System Access?
What's that?
That's where I met my sweetie.
Aww.
Meet interesting people, learn cool stuff, and maybe even meet that special someone. Begin your free 7-day trial today of the System Access screen reader, voice chat, and all the cool things on Samnet. www.satogo.com.
Well, with the release of Skype version 2.0 for the iPhone that works on 3G networks, we thought we'd put it through its paces. So who else to call up but our good old buddy, Scott Rakowski in Sydney, Australia. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, going good for a Saturday morning, man.
Yeah, and you are actually speaking to me on Skype on your iPhone using 2.0 on your 3G network, right?
Yep, 4 bars of coverage, sitting upstairs and talking on the 3G, yep.
And there is a bug right now, but you have contacted Skype via their contact form. As of today, the version 2.0, the flick gestures do not work. You cannot flick around, but everything seems to be on a certain place on the screen, so it is usable if you don't mind moving your fingers around and getting oriented to the screen, right? And for one thing, the keypad is very prominently placed now, so it's easy to find the keys.
The other thing that's annoying at the moment with this new version as well, if you lock your phone on a call, your call gets disconnected. If it's locked, you will not get any received calls on Skype. I don't know whether they're going to fix it in the upcoming OS 4.0. They say they will, but right now you have to not lock your phone if you're expecting any calls on Skype, because you're not going to receive the call otherwise. Regarding the buttons, the tabs are still the same at the bottom. You've got your contacts tab, call tab, your more info tab, and your history tab. The other thing that's annoying is if you've got lots of contacts, you can't flick right now. You cannot scroll your contacts easily.
But you said maybe the best way is to just limit it to online contacts or just your phone numbers, and that way you could narrow the list of options.
Yeah, right? That's right. You can't scroll the list. And even I tried doing the two-finger command, the two-finger swipe down to move the rows down, but that didn't even do any good. The other thing that doesn't work, and I've tested this out, is if you're in 3G and your coverage drops back to Edge, might be okay. But if you drop back to GPRS, your call quality goes really bad. It's like you sound really slow. You can hear the other person okay, but when you talk to them, they're like, you're sounding like you're in slow motion. So try to be in good 3G coverage. I don't know if it actually will flick back to Wi-Fi if you go out of 3G and go into a Wi-Fi hotspot, whether it'll kick over to Wi-Fi. My theory is it may not, but it's something to be aware of. And they're using the Silk codec in this new version too. It's something that I should mention as well.
Yeah, the audio fidelity is great, as you can hear. He's talking on 3G. You're not going to get any type of quality like that on a cell phone. So this takes the audio quality of calls through the cell phone networks to an all new level. They are going to start charging a slight or low premium fee to use it, but now that's been extended at least through the end of 2010, right, that you will be able to use it for free.
Yeah, that's what they're saying here in Australia. I'm assuming it's the same for the United States. As soon as I made a call on 3G, the first dialogue box was telling me till the end of August you can make free calls over 3G. But then I got an email the other day from Skype telling me that the new version for the iPhone had just been introduced and that it would be extended till the end of the year. But so far, I've spoken to a couple of people in the US on 3G and they sound really, really good. And I'm really impressed with the way it works. I don't know how much data this uses, but for the Silk codec, I would assume it would be the same as either being on your Mac or your PC, because you are using the same codec and same audio properties. So you might want to be aware of that if you're on one of these new 3G AT&T plans.
Yeah, audio probably not too bad, but I would be concerned about lengthy video calls. AT&T does have a mechanism, and people are just going to have to get in the habit of using it by logging in. And I don't know if there's an app to do this to see how much data you've actually used in your calendar month.
I think it's an absolute winner. So it beats the other products. And Nimbuzz, that has 3G calling, nothing sounds as good as this.
Right, and there's also Media 5, which has had some enhancements. So if you like to play with voice over IP, you've done some stuff with that as well, right, Media 5?
Yeah, that works really well. I've got it linked up to my SIP account here in Australia. The quality, I think, is pretty much like this. Haven't tried it over 3G yet, so that might be something we can look at a little later. And if you've got the subscription option, say if you're traveling abroad like I'll be in August, you can call back to Australia using 3G and not pay the overseas roaming rates. The voicemail in Skype, it's okay, but it worked better when you could flick. But right now, it's a little cumbersome to use. It works. If you like new technology and you don't mind having a bit of patience and using a finger to move up and down the screen, I think it's worth trying.
What about adding contacts? Can you do that now?
Pretty sure you can. I haven't actually done it because I add all mine from the Mac or the PC and then they show up here anyway. But I think it'd be very cumbersome to do because of the fact you can't flick right now.
We look forward to cool updates in the future. Audio is just phenomenal. When I talked to you and held the iPhone up to my ear, the quality is so good. So this really takes the audio quality of voice communications over cell networks, 3G networks, to an all new level.
It actually sounds really good if you plug in like a pair of earphones or put the iPhone into a speaker dock. The quality is just a person's right next to you. You just about reach out and you could touch them. And I've even heard that it works well with the iPad and the iPad 3G.
Thanks a lot, Scotty.
No worries, Michael. Good to be here as always, man.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.